Hello, Choicesters. Thank you for making great choices and listening to Choices. I am your host, Christine Choi. I've been quite under the weather. I don't know if you can tell from my voice, but it's a little goners. Anyway, thank you so much for tuning into part two of the Me Too Our Story series. I hope you listened to part one and also thought it was very important for everyone to hear these women's stories. Please make sure you share these episodes because it is so important that everyone hears these, and it's extremely important that we talk about it and educate the people around us, especially the future generation, of what is okay and what is not. Some of these circumstances can appear like there are some gray areas because there's a perception in this world that persistence is important in a romantic relationship, and sometimes there's a skewed idea of what a romantic relationship means. There's pressure put on women at a young age not to be a quote-unquote tease, and there are many instances where they just give in, which causes the men to believe that they did not necessarily sexually assault the women, but the women were still sexually assaulted. I think these are the times when things can get really confusing. There are some instances where I definitely felt like I was sexually assaulted, but I don't blame the guy for having sexually assaulted me. However, there are also instances where it was absolutely, clearly sexual assault. The change will come from educating our future generations. In educating the boys that when a girl says no, it means no. It doesn't mean keep asking her until she gives in. Also, I think it's extremely important in educating the girls to speak up and don't give in to things they do not feel comfortable doing. And I say it is important to educate the younger people, but in reality, it is important to do so for people of all ages. I mean, how often do we hear of men in power in a workplace sexually assaulting women in a lower position in order for them to advance in the company and sometimes even just to hold the position they currently hold? There are just not enough men being held accountable for things like this. And the saddest part of it all is that so many people witness these things happening or hear about it, and yet nobody speaks up against it. Perhaps out of fear of retaliation? That needs to stop. I know these exist in women sexually assaulting men assaulting men, women assaulting women. Yeah, this happens to all genders by all genders. But here are the statistics. According to the National Sexual Violence Resources Center, 1 in 5 women in the U.S. will be raped at some point in their lives, while for men, the number is 1 of 71. However, the number for contact sexual violence is a little closer to one another, where 1 in 3 women will experience it, while 1 in 6 men will. Then again, it's still double, so go figure. So, it is extremely important that we hear these stories of these brave women who chose to share their stories with me in their voices. Well, most of them in their voices. Some will be read by me. And I believe that we owe it to these women to make these stories known. Once again, I want to give the most heartfelt thanks to these ladies for sharing their stories. And also, this episode contains some disturbing details and adult language, so please feel free to skip the Me Too Our Story series if that makes you uncomfortable.
It's like someone took my soul and shattered it into a billion pieces and spread it all throughout the universe.
I pretty much just lost some innocence and felt like, oh, my body's no longer mine.
These were the clips I wanted to play at the top of the episode today because I think this is how women who are sexually assaulted feel 10 out of 10 times. Something gets taken away from us. Something that's supposed to be ours. Something that's completely sacred. And you just see it being taken away and broken and spread out into space for us to go and gather it all again. When it just seems completely impossible. Here are these women's stories.
When I was in college, I was in a sorority, and During Greek week, we were paired up with a fraternity, and we competed in all these things, trying to raise money for our charities over the course of the week. One of the main events was a flag football tournament, and our sorority got out in the first round, so we were all, like, dressed up in our colors, cheering for our team. But after we lost, we didn't really have any outfits prepared to cheer on the fraternity we were paired with. So we kind of made, like, these makeshift outfits and, like, repainted our face paint and everything. And I just made a T-shirt out of another old shirt with, like, their fraternity letters on it. And so we went back to the field, and we were all cheering. And I had midriff showing, had not really, like, given it much thought. But another girl in my sorority came up to me and said that the male advisor for all of Greek life, he had told another one of my sorority sisters that what I was wearing was inappropriate and I needed to leave and go change. There's no dress code on my campus. There's no leg for him to stand on to tell me that I couldn't be wearing that. It was completely his opinion.
Gosh, I don't even know where to start. There are so many, and we start to think that some of them are insignificant. You know, the cat calls, the kids in school that call you a whore or a slut, even though you're not. Several particular incidences come to mind. One of them is losing my virginity. I was 16, barely, I think, and I had a boyfriend. He was my boyfriend, but I didn't want to, and I'd said no, I didn't want to, and he really, really pressured me. I was aggressively groped outside of an apartment building in middle school, and one of my friends happened upon us and sort of broke that up. Who knows what would have happened? When I first started in the workforce, the owner of the company and my direct boss, who both happened to be men, invited me to go out to dinner and to have drinks. And I was in my early 20s and didn't feel like I could say no to that. So I went, and they got me very drunk, which I take some responsibility. I could have had less. I could have said no to the drinking, but felt again like a lot of pressure. And after several hours, the owner of the company, who was married and had children and in his 30s, leaned over and kissed me.
I was 13 in seventh grade. I was walking in New York City with my mom, eating a lollipop. To me, this is so innocent, but I will never forget what I felt next. As I was walking, I felt eyes on me, and not just regular eyes, but eyes of judgment and desire, which I had never experienced. As I looked up, there were 10 construction workers whistling, hollering, and staring at me like this lollipop, and I was so confused. My mom, after this moment, got eye level with me and explained to me what had just happened and how violating that is for a woman. That men will stare at us, and they're allowed to completely stare at a 13-year-old and say obscene things to her, and that it's just a part of the society.
I was 14. I was a freshman in high school. I was in a Spanish class, and we had students from all different years. I was a freshman. We also had sophomores and juniors and seniors in the same class, and the school put together a week-long trip to Mexico, and so our whole class was going together in a school van, and our teacher had rented an RV. We were planning on driving from central Utah down to across the border in Mexico to go do immersion Spanish, and it was a really long drive. One of the older students had offered several of us muscle relaxers in an attempt to sort of, I guess, make the drive go by quicker. And, you know, we would be driving at night and, you know, in high school people were interested in trying out different drugs or pills or whatever. And so I figured, what the hey, it was going to be a long, long night. You know, it wasn't uncomfortable. We were driving through the night and I was in the RV, so some people were in beds, other people were kind of in that couch area, kind of around like a seating area, and then I had actually taken to laying down in the galley of the RVs, completely unsafe. No seatbelt, no nothing, but just lying on the floor. And one of the other students lied next to me. And after a couple hours of having been on the road and been really sleepy and really groggy from this muscle relaxer, he started touching me. He started groping me. He started putting his hands down my pants and violating me. He basically spent as much time as he felt he needed touching my body, fingering me.
When I was 15, I went over to see my high school boyfriend, and his stepfather was someone who I had developed a very close relationship with. I did not feel close to my own dad at all, and the relationship that I had with this man was very much like the relationship that I wish that I'd had with my dad. He was extremely protective. He, you know, tried to be really involved with what was going on with school and with me, and I felt like I could trust him. And there was a day that I went over to see my boyfriend, and he wasn't there. And his stepdad ended up raping me in his and his wife's bed. A few months later, it was this very weird group of guys that I fell into what I thought at the time was a friendship. It wasn't. I had a completely, like, warped sense of who these people were and who I was and what was safe and what wasn't safe. But I went with some of them up to one of their houses, only it wasn't their house. It was, like, a relative's house. I ended up in this, essentially, like, a cement room. It had nothing in it. Except for a chair. It was really dirty. I just remember the ground being cement, and he walked me into the room, and I thought that he was just showing me something. Then he left the room, and he locked the door behind him, and he came back a while later. I don't know how long it was. I didn't have anything with me to track time, but it felt like a long time, and he came back in the room, and he basically was like, if you want to leave, you have to perform certain things or let me do certain things to you. And I laughed because I thought he was joking, because I thought he was my friend. And when I laughed, he left and he locked the door again. And he came back a couple more times and the same thing happened again. And I didn't believe him, and I finally did. I wasn't willing to do the things that he wanted to do, so I compromised and I did something else. I was under duress. I was totally coerced. I didn't want to be doing this, but I had enough evidence in front of me that I wouldn't be released unless I did these things, that it's like, fine, something's going to happen because I want to get the fuck out of here. When I was 18, I had a girlfriend, and we were both kicked out of our houses. One night, we were at a party with a group of friends that we had made. Again, they were guys. Again, I didn't understand what friends meant, and I trusted people that I shouldn't have. We were at this party, and I use the term party loosely. It was the two of us and, like, 10 dudes. But they were people that we saw all the time. Like, I trusted them. And one of them brought me a drink. I didn't see him make it. He just asked if I wanted a drink, and he brought it to me. And I just remember not feeling well. And I remember him asking if he could take me back, like, let me rest. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. And I don't remember anything after getting up from the table and him asking me that. What I know is that the next morning I woke up, my shirt was on, my skirt was off, my underwear was off, and I was bloody from the waist down. And I didn't see any of the guys. I was in a room by myself.
So I get up and I find my friend, and she's looking at me. I did put my skirt back on, but I was a wreck. And I was just like, I just want to get out of here. I just want to leave. We get into the car and she's like asking me questions. And I'm like, I have no idea what happened last night.
And she goes, all I know is that you went to lay down and then all of the guys just kept taking turns going in and out of the room all night.
For the last woman that spoke, there's a little more to her second story. I just want to play the rest of that. This part isn't exactly a sexual assault story, but it adds to the horrifying experience she had of being locked up inside a cement room and being forced to perform sexual acts to get out of a potentially dangerous situation, and the trauma that caused her.
One of the other guys in the group, as we were finally leaving in the car, he hit me. I was really taken aback, and I was like, why the hell would you do that? Don't do that again. And he did it again. And I was like in shock, and I didn't know what to think or, I remember reaching over to him in an effort to like hold his arm down, express to him that like that wasn't okay. But I grabbed his sweatshirt, and I'll never forget that he was like, don't fucking do that again, bitch. And I looked at him, and I told him, wait a second. So I tell you to stop, and you do it again, but you tell me to stop, and you expect me to listen to you. And he said yes, and he leaned over while we're on this crazy, windy road and opened the car door, and my dumbass wasn't wearing a seatbelt, and he had my arm in his hand, the car door's open, and my head's out the car door. And before I got to a point that they dropped me off, we drove through a couple other places in my hometown, and there are still roads in my hometown that I will not drive on because all I can see when I'm there is them.
Yeah. This really makes me so angry and so sad at the same time. I just can't believe that there are people in this world who think these types of behaviors are okay. All of these women's experiences are so different, but listen now to how they felt as these events happened.
In that moment, I was kind of angry, but I didn't really understand why, because I felt ashamed. I was kind of just confused, but I ended up blaming myself sort of in feeling shameful about that and feeling embarrassed that I was dressed inappropriately and that I made him uncomfortable.
And this is, of course, where the lines are super blurry. Is it assault if you've said no and then you kind of just give in because of the pressure? And I, as a mother of four daughters, I really think that it is. And I went home and cried.
And I did have the foresight to stop that from happening and got up and walked away. And I actually went into the office the next day and said, did what I think happened actually happen? And my boss said yes. And I said, that will never happen again. That will never, ever happen again. You will make sure that that never happens again, or I will report him.
I guess at that point, I was just in shock that that was completely allowed for them to do. And it was confusing that it was even legal.
I was so frozen and paralyzed that I couldn't even speak. I couldn't say no. I couldn't say stop. I didn't want to draw attention to the fact that, you know, there were other students that were right there. There was not an adult in that area. The adult was driving. And the thing that sticks out to me, I've been thinking about it, is really just the silence and the quietness, and how in the stillness of the night, I pretty much just lost some innocence and felt like, oh, my body's no longer mine, or, you know, it wasn't my decision. This is not something I wanted. I had no desire to think of him in romantic terms or share any part of my body with him ever. It was just that one night. It was just very clear to me that at any time that, you know, that I could be violated. And, you know, at a time when I was coming into my femininity and my body and sort of becoming an adult, it really just made me not want to lean into my femininity, to ever show it off. And, you know, in hindsight, when I look at my life and I look at how I've approached being a woman, I think that during my teenage years, I absolutely covered up. I absolutely wore baggy clothes. I absolutely took the whole grunge factor of the Nirvana years and then in the early 90s and used it to my advantage so that I wouldn't have to show off to the world that I had a figure and that I looked somewhat desirable underneath my clothes. And in fact, it almost became a point of pride to just feel like, I know that I'm beautiful, or I know that I am pleasing, and if I wanted to get the male gaze, I guess I could, but it just became this thing that I never wanted.
And the thing that I remember most about that day was that afterwards, I sat up in the bed, and I was sobbing, and he grabbed my face with his hand on both sides of my cheek. And while I'm crying, he gives me this very sterile, platonic kiss. And he, left me alone to gather myself together, and I walked home. My experience, not because I have any training in this, but because of friends I've known who've gone through assaults and rape and stuff, you have kind of one of two reactions. Either you completely withdraw and you totally shut down and within to yourself, or what I did is I was on this mission to have sex all the time with everyone I could to try and make up for what had happened. I called my mom and I was hysterical, and she came and picked me up, and I told her that if she took me home, I was going to kill myself. So after that, things got really bad. I fell into a super deep depression, and I cut myself for a long time, which had kind of already started before this, but it got really out of control. Constantly thinking about dying. It was constantly on my mind. Here's the thing. Given these two events that happened and this downward spiral that I went in terms of acting out and not taking care of myself and trying to fix what I felt like, the way that I described it is, it's like someone took my soul and shattered it into a billion pieces and spread it all throughout the universe. And it would take more lifetimes than I would ever have to pull it all back together again.
I got so angry with her, but I was also so ashamed because clearly she thought that I was the kind of person who would be okay with that, who would want that. I just couldn't believe it. It was so devastating.
Shame. Embarrassment. This isn't right. Why is it that the victims always feel ashamed? Why is that the first emotion that they feel? Something just doesn't add up here. Don't you think so? This is really fucking ridiculous. I want to hear, how did they handle this? Who did they talk to? Or if they didn't, why didn't they? And if they did, what happened? We heard last week, in many, many cases, women don't tell because of shame. Also, in many cases, even when women tell, it's not taken seriously or there's no consequences for the men. Did these women have different stories? Were things better this time?
I haven't told many of these stories to anyone up until the last couple of years, when it really became conversation that we were having as a community, as a nation of people and women.
You know, we got to Mexico and I didn't say a thing. I didn't say anything to my teacher. I didn't say anything to other students. I really just wanted to disappear and pretend like it never happened, because talking about it made me feel like that it was something that I wanted, and then maybe I would be seen as easy or something. I don't quite know, but I definitely wasn't comfortable about it, feeling like somebody could actually be punished for their actions. There's no precedent for it. I never saw anybody get punished for unwanted actions towards women or girls. Never. Not once in high school. Not in college. The Anita Hill stuff happened around that time. Nobody believes women. So I'm sure I internalized that, and never said anything. And it's really only been within the last year or so that this particular memory has come back for me and hit me quite hard.
She took me to a women's crisis center, and I met the most incredible counselor. And the counselor was like, I have to take you to the police department. So she took me to the sheriff's office. I told the sheriff everything that happened. I'm one of those people where I have a lot of anxious energy, and one of the ways that I deal with anxious energy is giggling. If you know me, you know that I have very distinct laughs. I have the, I don't actually think this is funny, but it's polite to laugh, so I'm laughing, laugh. I have the, I can't control myself, this is the funniest thing ever, I'm so happy to be with this group of people, this really loud, obnoxious, but very genuine laugh. And then I have this laugh, it is all anxiety, it's all anxious energy, it is, if I don't laugh, I'm going to cry, and I'm not, I don't feel comfortable crying, so I just have to get this energy out. I do it when I see someone hurt, I do it in all these awful situations, and I was doing that with the sheriff. I told the sheriff about both things that had happened, and the officer just said, there's too much gray area on both issues. We can't help you. There's nothing that we can do for you. Regardless of the acts that I've been falsely imprisoned, they wouldn't do anything. And I told her that a stepfather of a boyfriend who's in his 40s raped me, and they won't do anything. Given what had just happened earlier that day, they didn't take me to the hospital. They didn't do anything. They didn't do any kind of exam. They just said that there was nothing they could do.
Women go tell somebody and nothing comes from it. No one's punished and it becomes a forgotten story. Some don't even say anything because in their minds, they know that no one's going to listen. They know that no one's going to do anything about it. They know that no one's going to be punished for this. So who's helping the girls and the women in our world right now? How can we make a change so that women and young girls feel safe and feel backed up when they go through something like this, that they can talk about it and not feel ashamed or useless? This is why the women's movement that we're experiencing right now is so important. Women have to join forces and fight together. Men have to join us and help us with this fight. This isn't a woman problem. This is a human problem.
He was clearly aroused by my outfit or something, and that made him uncomfortable, so he used his power to make me feel uncomfortable. And then the layer two on top of having one of my friends go tell me and making it feel even more secretive and shameful than just telling me to my face. It took me years to realize that I shouldn't have felt ashamed, that he's creepy, and that I didn't do anything wrong. I think that this is a really amazing time right now for young women, including myself, and then younger women too, because when I was in high school, for example, there was nothing in the news or like nothing going viral about how dress codes were really put in place to, you know, it's like boys will be boys and girls should cover up and not taunt the boys and they can't be held accountable for their actions. Like, that's kind of the mentality that I grew up through all of my schooling with. And it's so amazing now that women are flipping the script and being like, wait a minute, that's bullshit. You should be able to control yourself. You should be able to not look at me as like a sexual object all the time and let me live my life. And I think it's really amazing that young girls these days are able to have the voice and have the wherewithal to stick up for themselves like that. Because I just didn't even understand. It wasn't even in our zeitgeist or in our grasp to even see that what was going on.
I've been talking to my oldest daughter, who's 14, and I told her about that. I reminded her that all of the things you are doing, you should enjoy doing. And if you're not enjoying them, stop doing them. Make the people around you stop doing them. I think that it is better, despite the hurt that it's bringing up, it's better to deal with all of the things that cause us trauma and hurt us than it is to bury them and pretend that they don't affect us on a day-to-day basis, and to know that you're not alone and that you have the support, to know that being pressured is not okay. Even if you've quote-unquote given in, that doesn't make it okay. You have say, and that the people around you, especially the men, but I know that abuse is not always coming from men towards women, that they do not have the upper hand. If we don't give it to them, understand that sometimes physically they do, but we can be better and we can be stronger together.
I'm so glad that women are speaking out about things finally. It is about time. I feel like this has been going on since the beginning of time, and no one ever talks about it enough. And the fact that we as women have to hide our bodies and feel ashamed of them because the guy will say something to you, the things people say like, oh, you asked for it, it's just so unfair.
As I got older and through my teens, I just became very, very adamant that if I was going to date somebody, I didn't want them to date me because of how I looked, but because of what I had to offer, my brain, just me as a human, not me as an object. I think that served me well.
I genuinely don't believe that there's something wrong with me. Yes, I trusted people I shouldn't have trusted. Yes, I was in these awful places mentally. But I don't believe that I'm the only woman who has this happen to multiple times. And there's so many more things than that. There's so much stuff that I feel like women go through that oftentimes we're trained to not recognize as being inappropriate. But I've struggled so much with coming to terms with the fact that I can have 3 experiences like this with different groups of people, and they're all still valid. Like, they are all still non-consensual contact. It's all still violations of my bodily integrity. And it has been so fucking hard because I don't ever feel comfortable being honest with that. I feel like society gives a grace period for like one rape or one assault. So shame is bad enough as it is. But then to have more than one happen, like, at what point am I to blame? And realizing that when I was 15 with my boyfriend's stepfather, that's not my fault. Yes, when I was 15, I chose to trust someone that I shouldn't have trusted, but I still said no. I still fought it. And then with the drink when I'm 18, like, just the amount of therapy that it's taken to come to terms with each of those being valid traumatic experiences has been so intense. It is just crazy what contact like that does to someone's identity and to their sense of self. I don't like sitting with my back to a door. All of my anxiety is about being safe and about not trusting people. Even when I'm at my job and I'm at court and I'm talking to a judge, if I've got anxiety, my brain is telling me that I'm about to die or that I'm about to experience serious bodily injury. It sucks.
And these great women obviously have taken so much of their inner strength to pick themselves back up and realize that they're strong and that they can move on and create a better world for the future for themselves and the future generations. They're amazing. They're just absolutely amazing.
I do feel really hopeful, and I feel like there are so many strong women out there who are ready to stand up against that. So I think it's a really incredible time to be a woman, and I'm incredibly proud to be a woman. I wouldn't have it any other way. I hope maybe somebody can relate or think back on some time when they were called out for some bullshit, non-existent dress code violation just because a man felt uncomfortable. Fuck that.
I hope to see, and I am seeing more and more of it, but I think it's hard. It's great virtually. It's great to talk about women supporting women, women empowering women, and helping each other rise up. I want that to be the real life practice that we have in our lives, in our schools, in our communities, where instead of saying, oh, did you see what she was wearing today? Or, oh my God, that haircut. My daughter's experiencing girls who don't like her because she likes a boy that another one of the girls in the group likes, and that's just enough, right? And to learn that it's not about that, but that we need to rise up together and support each other together. If we are ever going to change anything, we have to do these things together.
I hope to see men taking more responsibilities for their side in sexual harassment. Less blame on the female and more blame on the people that do it. And I hope to see more women be okay with their bodies and that their bodies are not always related to sexuality, but to power, beauty, and nature.
What I'd like to see is some equanimity in the future. What I'd like to see is for there to be a more balance in our positions of power, locally, regionally, and all areas of the government and private sector, nonprofits. I think that, you know, having more women voices and perspectives and senses of humor and senses of justice involved in actually making the rules and keeping them is really important. Essentially, what I'm doing now is, and as I'm into my older life, what I've done as an adult is really just try to empower myself and empower the women around me. And I continue to be on a quest for that. Not quite exactly 100% sure why, other than it feels good and it feels like the right thing to do. And I don't think that we should be afraid of balance or equanimity or equality.
I don't want to say that I want women to own what's happened to them. But at the same time, I feel like there is a way for us to come together and find strength in each other and not share our stories out of a sense of, you know, giving the finger to the man and screwing the patriarchy and doing it because of a sense of outrage because we're being invalidated, but finding strength and support in each other and recognizing that I don't feel any other woman should feel shame for what's happened to her. So why do I look at myself with shame? And I feel like there has got to be an opportunity for us healing each other and, well, healing ourselves, supporting each other. The intention behind sharing, it has to be about us.
Yes, absolutely. It's not going to change overnight. We all know this. It's a culture that's been this way for such a long time. It can't change overnight because that would just mean it was a band-aid. So, you know what? I'm willing to continuously fight this fight. I am willing to stand up for women, stand up for myself for the long haul. And really, we need everybody. We need the men. We need the women. We need the government. We need everybody to be on our side. Because you know what? It's not being on our sides. It's being on human side. It's all of us being on our sides ourselves. Okay, so thank you guys so much for listening today. That's going to be all for part two. Next week, we will hear some more stories from more women. And that will conclude the series of Me Too, Our Stories. Please be sure to follow Choice Says Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. It's one word, Choice Says Podcast, on all three of them. And send me any feedback or questions to choicesaspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for joining me today, and you guys have a great day. Okay, thanks. Bye.